Hello, my name is Philip Miriton, and welcome to my show, Conversations Beyond Science and Religion. Now, my website is heavenattheendofscience.com, and there's also a site called Conversations Beyond Science and Religion, where the podcasts from these shows are available for downloading. Now, the purpose of this show is to break through the common beliefs and perceptions that tell us how to think about the world and ourselves. These beliefs can be viewed as the prisms through which we see the world, the software programs that run the hardware we call the mind. So on this show, we take a hard look at these programs, these belief systems, and question whether they are true. Maybe there is a better, unhindered, unbiased way to view the world and ourselves that leads to a more positive outlook that makes us better people. And in making us better people, perhaps we can make a better world. So this is an idealistic, utopian vision, perhaps. But maybe all these questions are in our hands, and if it is, shouldn't we be doing something about it? In fact, shouldn't we be devoting more attention to this topic of seeing the world through cleaner, brighter eyes? Now, among the topics, with the exception of God, that has mystified probably more people than any others is the subject of consciousness. The dictionary definition of consciousness is, quote, an awareness or perception of an inward psychological or spiritual fact, intuitively perceived knowledge of someone's inner self. Now, most of us probably know consciousness by our internal sense of it, and maybe we don't care a lot about definitions, but it's no doubt a popular topic. Amazon.com, for example, lists 16,000 books with consciousness in the title. And as George Miller wrote in 1962, consciousness is a word worn smooth by a million tongues. And the views of consciousness range all the way from modern materialistic science, which views consciousness as an epiphenomenon of the brain, which is to say some sort of illusion, to forms of Eastern philosophy, which views consciousness as the ground of being. And it can't be overlooked that these two views are diametrically opposed. Materialistic science thinks that matter is real, and the hardcore among them believe that consciousness is an illusion. The Eastern philosophers, and maybe we could also say the extremists among them, believe that only consciousness or mind is real and matter is an illusion. And so maybe that helps explain the turmoil in the mind of humankind. And I would guess that many of us are maybe between these two extremes. The volume of writing on consciousness, perhaps, is in proportion to the depth of the mystery. We don't know a lot about consciousness, so we have a lot of people trying to figure it out and writing a lot of words on the topic. And the mysteries of consciousness cut across a wide variety of fields, from physics, which has an encounter with consciousness in the quantum theory, as we discovered in talking with Bruce Rosenblum of the quantum enigma a few weeks ago, to psychology, religion, spirituality, and something we call the New Age, which has as one of its themes the topic of new consciousness rising, or the rise in awareness. So today's show is entitled The New Consciousness: What Is It and Where Is It Taking Us? To talk about this topic, I'm very happy to have on my show today one of the world's leading voices of the new consciousness movement, Marian Knight. Now, Marian spent a good part of her life in the corporate world before turning her attention to topics in new spirituality and consciousness. She is the former publisher of New Connection magazine and founder of the New Consciousness Review. Now, the New Consciousness Review, which I would recommend to everybody, is probably the leading online review magazine and information hub, which covers the best of consciousness books, movies, blogs, music, and other media, as well as positive news from around the web. If you go on that site, you will see probably 98% of the leading thinkers in this area either featured or with their books available online. Now, Marian is also the author of a very enlightening little ebook called Seeding Change: Inspiring Evolution of Body, Mind, and Spirit. In this book, you'll find her interviews with the virtual who's who in the new spiritual movement, including Neil Donald Walsh of Conversations with God fame, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, and David Hawkins, and many other leading New Age or New Spirituality thinkers. I met Marian at the International New Age Book Show last year in Denver, where she was kind enough to stop by my little booth and chat about her New Consciousness Review and a few things we had in common. Welcome to the show, Marian. and I appreciate your being here today.
Thank you very much, Philip. It's a delight to be here.
Now, everybody is in a place where they went on a journey to wind up at, and you've been on a journey of your own to wind up as the founder of the New Consciousness Review. And I think it might help listeners to understand a little bit about your own journey, how you made the transition from the corporate world to your position now with this very enlightening website.
Well, that's a convoluted journey, but I'm sure no more convoluted than many of your listeners. I started out, my academic background was in psychology, and from there I went into hospital administration and then to research administration, and I ended up joining one of the companies that we were working with funding that was a software company. And so it took me all over the world. I parenthetically was born in South America and raised in Boston, lived in Virginia, moved to Israel. So I consider myself a citizen of the world.
That's interesting.
And when I moved from Israel to England, I met my current husband, who was in the financial services sector. He was a merchant banker and a lawyer. And about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years into our marriage, a very close friend of ours killed himself. And then he started communicating with my husband. And both of us had been so left-brained, you know, corporate types that this, as you can imagine, kind of shook us up.
Wow, yes, I would think it would. Go ahead.
And we started reading everything that we could about psychic phenomena. And little by little, as our horizons, as our circle of friends expanded into what we would call the New Age community, we realized that there were far more important things than material wealth and so on. And we both made this midlife shift. My husband became a hypnotherapist and I became I studied with Harry Oldfield in England, something called electrocrystal therapy. He's an expert in the imaging of biological systems, the imaging of the energy fields of biological systems. And when we decided to move to the United States to take care of my mother, who was elderly, we ended up in Portland, very luckily, because it's a wonderful, open-minded, happy community here. And that's when I joined the publishing world, and I took over a paper, renamed it New Connection, and published that for 7 years. And it brought me into contact with the most amazing variety of thinkers and realizing what richness there is in understanding our connection to each other and to all that is, and our responsibility for the world. It sort of lit me up, and I became passionate about being an advocate, really for waking up humanity. So for finding the authors who are putting themselves out there at they're putting their lives on the line to birth their books and their films, and passionate about doing their part to awaken other people to abilities of what it means to be truly, truly human, truly in contact with source, with that which nurtures our very inside. So I guess that's a very long answer.
Well, no, that, I mean, I asked you a open question, and that's what I was hoping you would do, because one thing we see here with this show, and I'm sure a lot of people you interview, is that there tends to be some kind of experience that those of us in this area have. And it could be a simple experience like reading a book or having a professor talk about a philosopher that resonates with you. And in your case, I think it's very intriguing because you were in the corporate world like a lot of people are, and in this materialistic domain where we think about money as being the default measure for success and for happiness. And you had this, I guess your husband had this experience where your friend communicated with him. Now, did this, and I'd like to talk about this just for a second. This was something that this deceased friend of yours shared with your husband, or were you involved in these communications?
No, I was not involved. I was just kind of picking up the pieces from my husband as he thought he was going crazy.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
What happened was that it kind of opened him up psychically. Yeah. And then he started being able to see things about and know things about people in the streets and people in the pubs and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the interesting observations that I want to ask you about is that it seems as if there's this spiritual side to everybody. I mean, if we are correct that there is, and we could call a lot of words, let's call it ground of being right now, or unified consciousness. We could use all sorts of descriptions out there. But there is such a thing. And if we are at core spiritual beings, then everybody has that inside of them. And perhaps people like you and many others in your website are simply having the courage perhaps to articulate that inner spiritual sense. I mean, is that your perspective on it, that there's some people that just articulate something that we all have?
I totally agree with you that we all have it, and we're born with it as children. There's so many children who have the imaginary friends and so on, and, right. and their parents, well-meaningly, kind of bring them out of connection with other dimensions and focusing only on the material dimension, right. and they kind of breed it out of them. And I've heard so many psychics say that they had to close down their gifts because their parents disapproved, or, you know, it made them stand out and be strange, and kids desperately want to fit in.
Yeah.
So, you know, one kind of category of people remain constantly in touch with their intuitive senses, with other dimensions. Then there's another whole category that we're seeing just exploding now of people who have had terrible crises in their lives. Either they've really come to the dark night of the soul, have no other place to turn to other than death. Say, God, you know, show me the way.
Right.
And Neil Donald Walsh was one of them.
Right.
And then they do have this enlightening moment. Other traumas or intense experiences could be, you know, the death of a parent or a death close by. And sometimes it just happens out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the questions I think we all face in this field is whether we're just imagining things. I mean, there is a school of thought, and I think the school of thought is, I would call it scientific materialism, or the Richard Dawkins school of thought, which would hold that these experiences we're talking about, from the psychic to the afterlife communications to the paranormal, are all imaginary, that they're not really occurring. What has been your response to people who look at you and say, oh, well, they're just, you know, they're just imagining things, or that's not real, or there must be some scientific cause? What has been your standard response to that?
I tend not to have standard responses, but I would say two things. One is that I think most beginning intuitives go through this phase of saying, it must be my imagination. Right. And it's only by having more and more occurrences with way too many, quote, coincidences, unquote, right, to be reasonable, that they finally begin to understand that this is a real phenomenon. So that's one aspect. The other aspect, of course, is the whole quantum physics side of things, where we have proven through physical experiments, carefully controlled scientific experiments, all over that show that consciousness affects the behavior of matter, the behavior of particles and waves. And the whole area and consciousness, if you look on my website, is one of the most vibrant areas as far as books and films coming out, because this is the exciting interface between matter and consciousness that we are just exploring. There was a wonderful movie, Black Hawk Down, I think it was.
Okay. Yeah.
Where an airplane that was developed by the Russians that was controlled by thought waves. This is moving out of the realm of science fiction.
Yes.
And all of the thought experiments, actually, the U.S. government had whole teams of people who were doing remote viewing during World War II.
Yes.
The Russians were famous for it. This is not science fiction. This is science fact.
Yeah, and I agree that the findings of quantum theory, in which it's indisputable, I think now, that consciousness plays a role in the makeup of the physical world. Depending on how you frame that, I think the book I mentioned, The Quantum Enigma, is just one of the many books that states that you cannot interpret quantum theory without involving consciousness. And what I've always thought is an amazing sort of contradiction in the scientific worldview right now is that we still have a worldview based upon a freestanding, independent world of from consciousness, when quantum theory says there is no such freestanding, independent world. And I think I would completely agree with you on the convergence that seems to be underway. Now, and on that point, one of the things that concerns me, though, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on it, is that this consciousness raising or awakening, that it will occur only in the New Age world, or only in Portland, and won't occur at MIT or Stanford, and so it will remain an outlier or in a materialistic worldview. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that topic. How widespread do you think this new order will be in the future?
All you have to do is read quotations and works of Einstein to see that he had already one foot in both camps.
Yeah.
I remember, in fact, in my book, I had interviewed this pathologist who was giving talk. She was collecting stories of people who had experiences with family members and friends who had passed. And she had been collecting these stories. As a pathologist, it was her job to speak to the families of the deceased. And there were just so many stories of communication from beyond the grave that she had to put them in a book. anyway, one day she was giving a lecture to the American Medical Association meeting in, I think it was Minnesota or something. I mean, you know, really bedroom conservative America. And there was light clapping afterwards. And then as she was making her way out of the room, individual doctors would come up to her to take her aside and say, you know, I didn't want to say this, but I've had experiences like that too.
Yeah.
And they're afraid to come out, but these experiences are happening everywhere. And there's another book I just read that impressed me greatly called Manifesting Michelangelo by Joseph Pierce Farrell. And this is a guy who, I won't go into the whole story, but he suddenly discovered the ability to actually cause changes in flesh, in bone, through his hands without intervention. Now, this is a kind of a watershed book because he, from the beginning, from the get-go, has involved documentation and doctors in his work, and he has set up a foundation to examine this scientifically according to the criteria of the popular scientific methods, you know, controlled studies, MRIs before and after, X-rays before and after, and so on. And I think that this is something that's coming. It's snowballing. It's just going faster and faster.
So this book, Manifesting Michelangelo, you're saying that the book addresses using internal states, mind, consciousness to physically alter the body?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And you know,
husband is a hypnotherapist, and he does in hypnosis as well. I mean, the mind face, in my view, is the frontier of medicine.
Yeah, it sounds like it's similar or a extrapolation or a further development of the placebo effect. Which, if you study, I've always been amazed by the placebo effect, which modern science knows is true. And in fact, a lot of drugs that are tested by the FDA are compared against a placebo or a fake pill. And it's always interesting to read about these studies where a placebo does as well as the quote unquote real pill. And it sounds like a similar area where beliefs, internal states, are affecting the outer world. And I do completely agree that if that kind of phenomena is scientifically proved, then we will start seeing a what I would call a revolution. Because in my own mind, I think we need a revolution in the way we approach the world, and I want to talk to you a little bit about what you see as the state of the new consciousness movement. And I'm calling it a movement. I could call it all sorts of other things, but I'm calling it a movement. And where you think it's heading. And I'm going to throw in the difficult topic, which is how long you think it's going to take. And so let's start with, how do you define the new consciousness?
Well, that's a good question. When I sold my paper and started up the website, New Consciousness Review, I spent months mulling over the right name. And consciousness is one of those words where people have very original ways of spelling it. So my website is NC Review. But new consciousness is kind of the overall attitude of mind, of change, of understanding that we are connected to each other, to something greater, that we have the power to, and I don't want to say, change our reality, although I just interviewed somebody who recommended the phrase, change our experience of reality, and change each other's experience of reality. It's really based on connection, awakening to what is really going on, what is our real potential as human beings, and moving towards realizing our highest potential.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, it's to me, you know, I have a philosophy degree, and a lot of the discussions like this remind me of Immanuel Kant, because Immanuel Kant believed that there was this thing in itself, he called it, which is beyond experience. He was really sort of an idealist who concluded that the mind structures reality. And for those who have the patience to read The Critique of Pure Reason, Kant was not exactly the clearest writer of all time, but he did believe that the mind not only structures reality, but provides the physical space in which to experience reality. But he still thought that outside of the mind was this thing in itself. And I was reading one of your interviews, I think it was Greg Baden, who talked about the mind imposing its structures upon the Play-Doh. He used the word Play-Doh of experience, which reminded me of Kant. And to me, the big challenge right now is, or the big question is, figuring out how much we as conscious creatures affect reality. We don't really know, right? I mean, we know we affect it, but as you just pointed out from this recent interview you did, someone said, well, we create it. Well, do we create it, influence it? Do we have to make it up? Do we partly make it up? And so, to me, this rising to awareness is really a recognition that we do impact reality, and the question is, how much? And so, I'm wondering what your thoughts on that is. Is that consistent with what you're thinking, or do you think I'm going too far?
I don't think it's possible to go too far. I think consciousness is going to be understood someday as a universal force, as important or even more important than the elusive, what was that phrase? You know, they're looking for the various forces of the universe, like magnetism and
dark matter and the Higgs boson. Yeah.
And this is going to be kind of the unified field theory, yeah, of what ties everything together. Yeah. And I personally believe that everything has consciousness in its own, that binds it forms the or principle around which matter manifests in the material world. And I think there are different level states of consciousness, physical, you know, metal, plant, animal, human. I think these are just variations on a theme. But in terms of human consciousness, I think we are the eyes, ears, and hands of Source, and that we have been given the great privilege of expanding the experience of life, keeping God from getting bored, if you will.
Yeah, I interviewed Bernard Haich a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure you're familiar with him. He wrote that book, The God Theory, and he's an astrophysicist, and he sort of just decided to put down in words what his own beliefs were. Okay, this is somebody that was raised as a Catholic, and he even went to seminary school, but his career is in astrophysics, and he's been the editor of the Astrophysicist Journal, and is part of the scientific community. When he thought long and hard about the universe, and in particular the fine tuning of the universe, he concluded basically exactly what you just said. He said that we are God living out life, that life is the format, is the playing field in which God is experiencing itself. And I've always been struck by that because I personally really like it when a member of the scientific community comes to a similar conclusion that I have, which is taking a much broader perspective on the phenomena and the miracle of life. So to me, a lot of what the issue is right now is credibility. It is people who have credibility in the academic world, they look down mostly upon the New Age, New Spirituality movement. Is that, or do you think that is improving? What's your thought on that?
I forget who it was who said that for every new idea, first people ridicule it, then they attack it, and then they accept it as self-evident all along.
Yeah, I think that was Schopenhauer. Yeah, that's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite sayings as well. And it really applies not only to philosophical or scientific ideas. It probably applies to politicians as well. But let me ask you, what do you view as some of the obstacles standing in the way of a true global shift in consciousness?
Well, I think probably the biggest obstacle is fear of ridicule within the individual. And the tools that have been used to kind of enforce that, like the media and so on, are becoming more democratized with the internet and with people, particularly the artists who are always out there at the forefront, the way. Sometimes they pave the way for good, sometimes they pave the way for bad. You know, our cultural life is very multifaceted, although good and bad are very, you know, subjective terms.
I would agree. I think that it's a social and psychological problem right now. I think ridicule is a social issue where we don't like to be put down or perceived as being crazy or an outlier from our peers. And then there's a psychological, I think there's a psychological issue here, which is we want the world to be real. We want the world to be freestanding. We want Einstein's independent world. And to answer that question or to address that concern, the psychological one, I think it's a matter of understanding. It's a matter of understanding that we live, as Leibniz said, in the best of all possible worlds, because not only is it a real world, but it looks like we have a big impact over it.
It's not just understanding, Philip. In my view, it's also getting comfortable with rapid change.
Yes.
You know, we all like to, as you say, feel the of being able to rely on stability. In Greg Braden's last book that I reviewed, he's talking about speaking with his mother, and she wants to go back to the old days, to the way things were. And he's saying, Mom, get over it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Our understanding is growing so rapidly, exponentially. I mean, when you think that 100 years ago, the state of technology on the planet, you know, the disc covered in 100 years is mind-boggling.
Yes.
When you look in all of human history, and it's like a flywheel that's increasingly speeding up. I mean, just what happened in the last 10 years. We've gone from clunky, steam-driven internet to the iPhone and the iPad and the cloud, and it shows no slowing down. Human ingenuity some might say aided and abetted by alien technology, but you know, that's another story, is just exploding.
Yeah, and I think that going back to the New Age field, remember how earth-shattering the Celestine Prophecy and the Tao of Physics, the Dancing Wulu Masters, I mean, those were books that were trying, you know, the Tao of Physics was making that connection between Eastern philosophy and quantum physics, as was the Dancing Wulu Masters, and then the Celestine Prophecy was sort of a book that told that parable about the interconnectedness of humankind and about how earth-shattering those books were. Now it seems as if we are seeing books like that come out every week.
Absolutely.
And we continue to see the envelope being pushed. I think that when we see books in the opposite field, say from Stephen Hawking and Brian Greene, where they talk about the multiverse and string theory and dark matter and all these other sort of questionable theories of modern science, you could take a step back and you could say, let's see now, I have a personal experience of someone talking to me after they were dead. I have a personal experience of an out-of-body experience. But a multiverse, I've never experienced, and scientists basically say that we'll never experience one. And so to me, that's another sort of chip in our favor, which is that we have these concrete, real experiences of this higher awareness. And so I'm not sure if you go there, but I always think that that's why this new awareness probably is inevitable and will succeed because of the fact that it's real to the person experiencing it, at least.
Well, the mere fact that someone can conceive of a multiverse, the mere fact that they can do the mathematics and show the probability of this existing, is mind-blowing.
Yes. And you know, it goes to the question of the fine-tuning of the universe. And this is something that we've talked about in other shows, which is, and Bernard Hesch mentioned this in his interview and in his book, which is that if you look at the fine-tuned nature of the universe, there's three choices. There's chance, the multiverse, or God, or some consciousness. And when you go through those choices, it looks as if unified consciousness is the best explanation. And what I think we need to have happen is we need to have the scientists sort of go through their process of elimination and say, well, we've ruled out everything else, and what's left standing is that we know that we exist. We know that we have a consciousness. We know that there's a connection between consciousness and reality. Maybe we should not dismiss it out of hand.
Well, my hope, possibly even my expectation at some point in our human history, is that, like the parable of the blind man and the elephant, when we get enough, when we move out far enough, we will see the interconnections and the validation, perhaps, of all of these points of view and bring them into some kind of unified theory.
Yes, and that's one thing that I would agree, that a truly unified theory has to involve consciousness, the mind, spirituality. Otherwise, you're not explaining everything. Now, with regard to the people you've interviewed, and you have interviewed a lot of people, is there one or two interviews or authors, lecturers, thinkers that has inspired you more than others?
Oh, that's a very tall order. You know what sprang to mind right away was my interview with Hank Wesselman, who is a shaman, and he studied and became friends with a Hawaiian kahuna, and wrote about his experiences, actually transcribed many of the conversations he had with his kahuna in a book called The Bowl of Light. And one of the things that a kahuna, a priest, and in fact, it was, I think Haile Makua was probably the almost the last direct descendant of King Kamehameha. And one of the things they have to do is they have to learn their whole ancestral lineage. They have to learn by rote, you know, all of the wisdom and be able to transmit it down. Now, Makua never had a son, and he had semi-adopted Hank Wesselman and entrusted him bringing down this ancestral wisdom. And when you read this wisdom that's, you know, thousands of years old in a direct lineage, and you listen to it or a perspective of modern science and modern physics, and in fact, the whole potpourri of metaphysical thought that's swirling around our world today, you are in awe of the clear understanding, the metaphysical insight that these ancestors had thousands of years ago.
Yeah, that is that's really interesting, and it seems as if we are sort of doing a loop here, where many of the early thinkers, it was more part of their culture, their very being, and American Indians would be an example. Mm-hmm. And the early Indian Hindu thinkers. And now it seems as if we're going through this, you know, we went through the Enlightenment, Newton, and the whole scientific revolution, and we're coming around the loop here where we have mastered technology, but we really haven't mastered the spirit. And now I see more and more people looking inward and asking these questions. And I think what's so good about the New Consciousness Review is that it's bringing these thinkers, these ideas to the forefront. And that's something that, you know, maybe this is all wrong, but unless you consider it as an option, we'll never know for sure. And I personally think that it's inevitable that this is where things are going. Now, what do you have planned for the future here? Do you plan on publishing more books? Do you plan on expanding the New Consciousness Review? What are your plans?
That's a really good question. As you know, I started a radio show this past year, and that has gotten a lot of attention. I think people like yourself and other hosts of both internet radio and TV, as well as somehow we're not making the transition to mainstream cables, but there are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of people like us who are coming together to raise consciousness. I just think that we are in an important phase of our evolution. You know, both Don Beck and Barbara Marx Hubbard characterize it as a spiral. We keep on going around in circles, but each time we make that turn, we're at a higher and higher space in our evolution.
Yeah. And in terms of one of the, I mean, there's a lot of sayings that sort of guide me in this journey. And one of them is by Eugene Wigner, who said that science progresses funeral by funeral, which is sort of a crude way to put it, but there's nothing like a new generation to think in a more open-minded way. And the nice thing is that people like us, we we can still, there's still time for us to open our minds and to make something out of this. And maybe it's a function of deciding that this is the way to go, and I don't care about the ridicule, and because I think you're exactly right that many of those in the mainstream are afraid of rocking the boat.
Well, I think when you say there's time for us, I think that there are tremendous pressures on the time that we have available. I mean, if you listen to my interview with Irvin Laszlo, we really are at an environmental and social tipping point. And if we don't do something pretty dramatic to awaken people in the masses and demand systemic change, the world that we are going to leave to our children and grandchildren is going to be a wasteland. That is why it's so important to be part of this movement of awakening and to understand how our actions impact each other, how they impact the world, and to take personal responsibility for change, become part of the solution.
Yeah, and I think that that's right on point, and that's my thinking as well, which is it seems as if as you mature, you realize that we only may have one shot at this, and so we have to do the best we can to do to make the change now. And I do recall in some of your interviews where you sort of go to the next step. You don't say, well, what are your ideas and what are your abstract thoughts? You say, well, how can we affect change in the real world? Because unless that happens, then we are just sort of gazing at our navels, if I may put it that way. Mm. We sort of have to focus on affecting real change. Now, it's probably helpful as we draw to a close here to tell people about how they could find your own radio show, which is...
Oh, sure.
Go ahead.
My radio show is broadcast through Contact Talk Radio, which is ctrhotspot.com. I have links on my website both to the radio show, and I also have all of the interviews on my website as well, which is ncreview.com for New Consciousness Review. Yeah. And you know, I would hear from your listeners what their experience is. What are the books that provided a tipping point or change for you? What really touched you deeply? And if those books are not on my website, let me know and we will put them up.
Yeah, and I think that that's a very good way to bring this to a close, because we are open to people with new ideas and with the courage to articulate, to voice these ideas and start putting some of these new consciousness ideas into practice. I would like to thank you, Miriam, for a very entertaining interview. I appreciate your time. And please visit Miriam on the websites that she mentioned. My own website, as I said, is heavenattheendofscience.com and Conversations Beyond Science and Religion. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.